Reincarnated for Revenge. Chapter 511. A Mudslide. The roar echoed through the relentless rain, like the harbinger of death. Occasionally, small animals darted past. Callum stared in the direction of the incident, feeling the mountain shaking noticeably. He had only one thought: he hoped Callista wasn't in that direction. "Mr. Callum, is it an earthquake?" Ryder asked uncertainly. At that moment, distant shouts echoed as the two men chasing Callista ran back, yelling, "Something's wrong. The mountain collapsed. There's a mudslide." They no longer cared about Callista, because the severe deforestation on the mountain combined with the heavy rain had caused a mudslide. If they were buried, they would die. Hearing the commotion, Callum immediately ran toward them and intercepted them. "Where's the person you were chasing?" The man was abruptly seized by Callum, rainwater coursing down his face. As he looked at Callum, his teeth chattered. "She ran off, but with the landslide, I fear she may be buried." Before he could finish, Callum roared and punched him, knocking him to the ground. The punch was so powerful that the man rolled twice on the ground, losing some teeth. But this didn't relieve Callum's anger in the slightest. If it weren't for these men chasing Callista, she wouldn't be in such danger. At that moment, his desire to kill was strong. If he weren't in a hurry to save her, he would have killed this man. "Mr. Callum. Mr. Callum, the collapse has stopped. It seems to be a small, scale mudslide." Ryder pulled Callum back. Even though it was a small, scale mudslide, his heart couldn't help but sink. He didn't dare to imagine what would happen to Callum if Callista accidentally died here. Callum didn't respond, pushing Ryder aside and sprinting toward the direction of the mudslide. He made a call, his trembling voice mixed with the rain. "Is the GPS signal still there?" The person on the other end quickly replied, "The signal is weak, but it's still there. Ms. Callista seems to have stopped moving." "But Mr. Callum, what's that noise on your end? It sounds huge. Send me the location." "Yes, Mr. Callum, it's been sent to your phone." "Wait. Mr. Callum, satellite data indicates a change in the geological situation in your area. It's right where Ms. Callista is. You can't go there. It's dangerous." After receiving the location data, Callum immediately hung up and called for a helicopter to bring rescue tools to the area. Although it was raining, the absence of thunderstorms in winter meant the helicopter could buy. How, and he didn't have much time left. On a cold winter night, the pouring rain was chilly. Callum had never believed in fate, but this time, he had an absurd thought. Is it destined that he and Callista will be forever apart? Is this life doomed to end in tragedy, just like the last? "Whenever I have the chance to get close to her to seize her, will there be a hand ready to whisk her away? If so, I absolutely refuse to accept such a fate. Callista always said I'm lucky. If I truly am, I would trade all my remaining luck for her safety." When Callista heard the commotion stop, she breathed a small sigh of relief. She was somewhat grateful she had fallen. If she had continued forward, she might have been buried directly. But the situation was still dire. The exit was blocked, and she was about 10 meters underground. Mud and rock sealed the slanted exit, and if the rain continued, the mud could bury her completely. She believed Callum would come to rescue her, if he made it in time. Callista held her phone close to her chest. The phone's light was her only solace in this less than 2 square meter underground pit. She breathed cautiously, knowing oxygen was extremely limited. When Callum saw the mudslide had stopped, he felt a glimmer of hope. If the affected area was small, Callista might still have a chance to escape. But reality dealt him a heavy blow. When he reached the edge of the mudslide, the tracker showed Callista was directly beneath him. He tried moving sideways, but the tracker immediately shifted. His newly acquired tracking system had almost no margin of error. This meant Callista, or at least her phone, was right beneath his feet. He called Callista, but she didn't dare answer. In the limited space, the air would last no more than an hour, and she couldn't waste any of it. "Callista, I'm buried, but before that, I fell into a naturally formed underground cavity. However, I may not last long. Mud and rocks have blocked the entrance, and the air is limited." Her words were as calm as ever, but only she knew how much effort it took to type those words. Her whole body was numb with cold. Every breath seemed to take away the last bit of warmth from her body. She had a strong premonition that she might die here. At that moment, she felt a wave of regret. Chapter 512. An impossible task. She shouldn't have run. She should have stood her ground and fought them with her hatchet, instead of being chased by them. She also regretted rejecting Callum's offer to accompany her when they left. If he had been by her side, or if she had held onto him when they got off the car, would any of this have happened? The phone light went out, leaving her surrounded by darkness. She quickly turned on the flashlight, illuminating the small space. When the hole wasn't blocked before, water had already seeped into the slanted underground pit, soaking her legs below the knees. It felt like she was already a corpse. Sitting there, with water soaking half her body, she illuminated the phone once again, revealing the time, 8 o'clock. She should be able to survive until 9 o'clock with the air here, but she was getting closer to the mountaintop. Callum needed to find suitable tools, transport them, and dig to rescue her. It seemed impossible to do all this within an hour. Callista calculated, her heart growing heavier. She wondered if she would die here this time. If she did, would someone come to collect her body? After receiving Callista's message, Callum still felt a chill run down his spine and was reluctant to face it despite being mentally prepared. She was underground, and with the rain continuing, more mud and debris would pile up. Her survival space might shrink further, and he probably had less than an hour to save her. Within an hour, how could he rescue his beloved in the rain before another mudslide were to happen? Callum had never been stumped by anything before, but now he felt utterly helpless. As his fingers lightly touched the ground, his expression was one of utter despair. He wished for the rain to cease, for the mudslide to stop its relentless flow. He yearned for the plane to speed up, or for her to have just a bit more time. That way, he could figure out a plan and devise a solution. "Mr. Callum." When Ryder and others caught up, Callum looked at him, stood up, and calmly ordered, "Inform them that within 10 minutes, I want to see handheld digging machines and a dozen strong young men. Ryder glanced at him and hurried off. Within such a short time, the airplane would be the fastest, but 10 minutes, Callum walked to the edge of the mudslide. Callista said the entrance was buried by the mudslide. To prevent more mud from seeping down, he had to cut off the source. After doing so, he could begin the rescue operation. Large-scale machinery would be fast, but transportation would take top long. Manual excavation would be slower, but it was the fastest method to he could do this. It shouldn't be a problem. So before that, he had to find the entrance to the pit. Fortunately, when he found the entrance, the airplane finally arrived. With various rescue tools being brought up by the airplane, Callum felt a surge of hope. After the rescue personnel dropped tools from the sky and slid down from the airplane along the ropes, a dozen people were in place, and the rescue operation began in full swing. More than 10 or 20 minutes had passed since Callista was buried. Her time was running out. Everyone exerted all their strength to dig. The sound of electric tools was reassuring at this moment. Of course, some people used basic tools like shovels to remove mud and debris. After Callum arranged for subsequent planes to lift large-scale excavation equipment, he put down his phone, ready to help, but was stopped by Ryder. Mr. Callum. Ms. Callista must be very scared right now. Encouraging her to hold on is more important than anything else. Rainwater flowed down Callum's chin incessantly. He had arranged everything, but he absolutely couldn't stand by. We're rescuing my wife. He emphasized the word my only I can save my wife. Hearing this, Ryder couldn't stop him. Under Callum's command, a continuous stream of supplies was transported up the mountain by the airplane, making the area brightly lit even in the rain. How long was a distance of 10 meters? About 20 steps, about half a minute, and about 2 or 3 stories. But at this moment, Callum felt that 10 meters was equivalent to a lifetime. It seemed that no matter how they dug, there was no end in sight. In reality, there were numerous modern tools available for excavation. However, how could one find them within an hour? And even if found, how could they be transported quickly? Once transported, could she afford to wait? After much contemplation, which felt like an eternity yet was only a moment, Callum decided to begin with manual excavation while waiting for larger equipment. This was undeniably the fastest and most effective approach. However, the rain made their excavation work significantly difficult. Like everyone else, Callum had rolled up his suit trousers and stood ankle deep in the muddy water. He diligently used a shovel to clear away the mud and rocks that had been shattered next to the tools. He had never been in such disarray, nor had he ever endured such hardship. But as long as he could save her, it was all worth it. Thankfully, everyone was putting in their best effort. Coupled with the convenience of the tools, the excavation progressed swiftly. However, a new situation arose with Callista. Chapter 513. I only want you. She had no choice but to stand up, but her legs below the knees had already gone numb from the cold. Maybe she had been too optimistic in her imation. She might not even have an hour left. As the water level rose, her living space shrank, and she was already finding it hard to breathe. She tried to slow her heartbeat, but it quickened involuntarily, a sign of oxygen deprivation. She needed to distract herself. The only way she could think of was to chat with Callum on her phone. Callista, what are you doing? Callum put down the shovel and carefully wiped the mud off his phone. He replied, rescuing you. After he sent it, he felt it was too brief, so he asked, are you scared? Callista smiled faintly. Her fingers were numb from the cold as she struggled to type on her phone. Callista, I wasn't afraid before. But you've spoiled me, and now I'm a little scared. Callum's eyes welled up with tears, but he quickly pulled himself together. Told her, I will continue to indulge you like this in the future. Callista asked, like raising a child. Am I your child? Callum replied, consider it practice for raising a child to gain experience. Callista felt very satisfied. She actually liked being treated like a child. Thinking of something, she typed quickly. Callista, when you arrived, I saw you. But those people were chasing me, and I didn't dare stop. Callum's heart surged with emotions, which he forcefully suppressed. He gritted his teeth and replied, I'm sorry I was late, but I won't let them get away with it. Callista, yes, this area is very poor. I heard many women in the villages are bought. They are very pitiful too. Callum told her, once you're out, if you're willing, you can take charge of this entire area. She replied, I'm willing. However, she might not have time. Callista didn't send the last few words. It was 37 minutes past 8 now, and the possibility of her being rescued alive was very slim. Dying here alone was too lonely, but at least she had her phone. She asked sincerely, if I were to die, would you fall for another woman? At that moment, Callum looked around frantically. In a short time, they had dug down 2 meters, which was a miracle, but it wasn't enough. It was far from enough, eyes red with desperation. Everyone felt his hysteria. It will be okay. Ryder told Callum cautiously. Callum just looked at him deeply, clutching his chest. I can feel it. His voice trembled, she doesn't have much time left. Instantly, everyone's actions seemed to speed up. Callista's fingers clawed at the dirt behind her. As the oxygen levels decreased, she felt increasingly uncomfortable. To distract herself, she typed another random message to Callum. Callista, do you think it's because you weren't meant to be mine? Did I deserve punishment for getting involved with you? Callista genuinely thought so. She had changed everything with a second chance, but the one thing that remained unchanged was her entanglement with him. She added, you and I are just not meant to be. Callum typed forcefully, no. I want nothing but you. I won't love anyone else, only you. Callista's lips curled slightly. She slid down the wall, fully sitting in the water. The cold water kept her awake, but the headache might have been from hypoxia or fever. Yet, she still felt a sense of joy. Callista, then I can rest easy. If you were to stop loving me or forget me, it would make me feel as though I had never truly lived. Stop saying things like that. Stop tormenting me with those words. Kaiser's eyes were bloodshot, his chin trembling slightly. He gripped his phone tightly, forced to close his eyes. There was no third party between them, no misunderstandings, no ridiculous in-law disputes, no class prejudices. But why was it so difficult to be together? It seemed like fate was deliberately setting all obstacles in their path. He had been overcoming hurdles non-stop, almost reaching the end, only to be toyed with like this. He refused to accept this fate. Callista continued typing. Each word felt like a final message. "Callista, do you know? My biggest regret in my past life was that although the world used the medicine I developed, no one knew my name. I saved many lives, but no one thanked me. I loved someone for a long time but never got a response. In the end, when I perished with the enemy, I was terrified because I felt like I had never truly lived. Would anyone even care to retrieve my body? If I died, would anyone remember me? Probably not, right? Callista, the only one who would remember me would be Wanda. I loved her so much. She gave me all the warmth I ever knew. She always wanted to find me in my past life, but I stubbornly missed the chance to keep living." Callum wanted to type, but no words came out. He wanted to say that this life was different. He was hers, his mother was hers too, and everything he had was hers. She could have anything she wanted. Chapter 514. Hold on for me. There would be countless people who would remember and thank her, but she couldn't die. Her name couldn't be on a memorial plaque. He couldn't live without her. Callista typed again, seeming to pour out everything she had never said before. Callista told him, "I used to be so weak, thinking that stepping back would open up a world of possibilities. But when others began to close in on me, I had already become accustomed to retreating. This habit was terrifying. It allowed the villains to seize me by the throat, and even if I had the power, I wouldn't resist." She continued, "So, I feared many people. I feared my stepmother. Whenever she had a cold face, I would be scared to the core, feeling like I was still 12 years old, with her being a giant I couldn't reach. I feared Quincy. Whenever she tattled, I would get in trouble. Whenever she wanted to bully me, I had no way to fight back. I also feared my father and the student at school who always looked down on me. And of course, I feared you. Whenever you frowned, my heart would race, wondering if I had done something wrong or if you disliked me even more. But even so, I couldn't disappear from your sight. Loving you took all the courage I had in my previous life. Did you know that?" Callum replied, "I know now." He sat down, surrounded by various noises, but he couldn't hear any of them. He was lost in their world and asked, "When I was pursuing you before, I felt you were so hard to get. I was different to you, but you wouldn't yield. Now I know why. Because back then, I didn't love you with all my effort. You were just throwing a little tantrum, right?" Callista smiled as she typed, "Right." Callum chuckled, even though his expression looked more like crying than laughing. Callista told him, "I was so foolish in my past life, so in this life, I've become a bit wiser. Fear. That's unnecessary. Cowardice is unnecessary too. so are honesty and soft-heartedness. None of those bad habits are useful. When I was reborn, it felt like I filtered my life. I thought eliminating those unstable factors would make me invincible. And indeed, I did become invincible. Those who schemed against me didn't get what they wanted. Ending up here tonight is just bad luck. Maybe my greatest enemy is fate itself? D**MN, it hurt so much when I fell, and it still hurts now. Callum immediately became anxious. He asked, "How are you feeling now?" Callista sat in the cold muddy water. Her head was growing hotter, and her consciousness was fading. She traced the words on the screen, imagining his worried face. She replied, "My situation isn't good right now. My head hurts. I'm not sure if it's from a lack of oxygen or a fever, probably both. Half my body is soaked in muddy water. Trust me, being in water in this weather is the cruelest punishment. Soon, I'll suffocate, freeze, or drown, and I have nowhere else to go. To kill me, fate designed this unique method. How original." She seemed to have let go completely, shedding all restraints before death, revealing her true self. She narrated her sorrow with an optimistic touch, a hint of playfulness, all in an effort to make him remember her. Callum felt suffocated by her words. He could imagine her current state, confined, cold, suffocating. And he couldn't even hold her. It felt like being trapped in a living nightmare. He quickly begged, "Can you hold on? For me, please." Callista parted her lips to pant. Her breathing became rapid, and her body grew numb. 1/2 She didn't have much time left. She had to type quickly, each word written with her life. "Callista, if I die, don't be sad. Being reborn was already a blessing. I avenged myself and became a star in the medical field. I am satisfied. I have achieved everything I wanted." She let out a self-deprecating laugh. She continued, "But I realized that in the face of death, what I'm most grateful for in my reincarnation is gaining your love. I never wanted to face this, but it's clear now. Being loved by you is my greatest satisfaction, more than revenge or shame. I seem to have always forgotten to tell you, or maybe, I never wanted to admit it. I love you. From my past life to this life. I have never been able to change my heart." At that moment, tears finally fell from Callum's eyes. He was at a loss on how to respond to her declaration, "I love you." He had longed to hear it countless times, but never under such circumstances, and never this way. He typed quickly, "This doesn't count. I want you to tell me you love me in person." "I won't accept this expression," he sent the message but received no response. Panic set in as he quickly sent another message. "Callum, talk to me. Callie, talk to me." He wondered if her phone had died or if she had lost consciousness. In his panic, he called her. The phone rang for a long time, but no one answered. At that moment, terror engulfed him. "Callum, Callie. Talk to me, please. Just type a word, or hang up the call, anything to let me know you're there. I beg you." Chapter 515. As cold as ever. The phone rang over and over. Half, Conscious, Callista found the ringing incredibly annoying, disturbing her and making her acutely aware that she was on the brink of suffocation. The feeling was excruciating. At that moment, four planes flew overhead. They were carrying something enormous beneath them, and the roaring sound echoed across the sky. Earlier, in addition to digging, some people had been cutting down trees to clear a space. Now, the large excavators had finally arrived. Though it would take some time to set up, everyone saw hope upon seeing it. Even Callum seemed to come back to life, more excited than ever before. He quickly typed, "Callie. Did you hear that? The machinery is here. I can rescue you soon. Just hold on a little longer, I promise, just a little longer." The lack of response made Callum's heart sink again. He could barely hold onto the phone with both hands as he told her, "I'll call you. If you're there, please hang up." Everyone around him sprung into action, taking up their tools and surveying the surroundings. They all worked tirelessly, for they knew that the girl below was on the brink of collapse. In this situation, Callum pressed the call button with all his hopes pinned on it. The phone rang once, twice, the beep sound seeming to stretch out infinitely, making Callum hold his breath. Finally, on the fourth ring, the call was cut off. His eyes lit up with joy. "She's still there. She's still alive." He handed the phone to Ryder, cherishing it as if it were a precious treasure. "Call her every 2 minutes and make sure she hangs up every time." With that, he threw himself into the bustling efforts. The machinery was set up, and after measuring the depth with the life detector, a half-meter wide drill began boring straight down from the initial excavation. Mud splattered everywhere, and the roaring sound was exhilarating. No one had expected such a massive machine to be brought in. With it, Callista would surely be saved. But then Ryder suddenly shouted in panic, "Mr. Callum." She didn't end the call. At that moment, Callum was directing people to drag the cables. After he heard Ryder's words, his expression changed. "Call her again." A moment later, Ryder said with a mournful face, "She still hasn't hung up." Callum was in a race against time with death itself. "I won't lose, nor will I accept defeat. I'll get what I want. No one can take away the woman I want to save. No one." As soon as the drill emerged, Callum tied a rope around himself and went down without a second thought. The half-meter space was too narrow. He got several scrapes on the way down, but it didn't matter. None of that mattered. Below, there was indeed a small space of about 1 to 2 meters, now partially filled with the earth that had fallen from above. Hearing the phone ring, Callum reached through the mud and water to grasp her hand, still clutching the phone tightly. Callista was cold, covered in mud, looking almost like a corpse. Hot tears fell on her face, but she didn't react at all. Callum hugged her tightly to confirm she was still there, then quickly tied the rope around her. He tugged on the rope, and the people above slowly pulled her up. Callum looked at the cramped, airless, pitch, dark space. It was suffocatingly oppressive. He couldn't imagine how Callista had endured an hour here. His feet soaked in the cold, muddy water. Just as she described, it was the most brutal torture. The rope came down again. Callum quickly climbed up. Meanwhile, they were already using hot water to clean her face, clear the mud from her nose and mouth, wrapping her in blankets, and using giant heat lamps to warm her. The drizzle glistened in the warm red light. It wasn't raining heavily anymore, and she was still there. Callum didn't interfere with the medical team's efforts, even though he wanted to hold her in his arms. She was in shock. Every second mattered, as she could be taken by death at any moment. Holding her cold hand, Callum rubbed it over and over, but it remained as cold as ever. Because of the suffocation, Callista had swallowed a lot of mud, making the rescue even harder. To help her breathe, the medics had to cut a small incision in her neck and insert a tube into her trachea to assist her breathing. Even with their skilled hands, tiny droplets of blood still trickled down, making her washed, out face look even paler, almost lifeless. Callum choked back sobs. Holding her hand, he closed his tear-filled eyes and kissed her trembling fingertips. He said, word by word, "You always said I was lucky, that I was favored by fate, getting everything I wanted. If I am truly so lucky, if the heavens really favors me, then you will wake up. The only thing I want for the rest of my life is you." As the mud was gradually cleared away, she still didn't open her eyes. Just when all the medical staff were about to give up, Callista's hand, held by Callum, suddenly moved. Chapter 516. A miracle. The tiny movement in Callista's hand felt like an illusion against Callum's palm. Her heartbeat has returned. Continue oxygen supply and clean her up. Suddenly, the surroundings became chaotic. Though Callista was still in the midst of being resuscitated and not yet out of danger, Callum strangely felt a sense of relief at that moment. Just now, Callista had pressed his palm slightly, as if to say, "Because of you, I don't want to die. So, don't be sad." Callum kissed her fingers repeatedly, feeling her unspoken message more clearly with each kiss. In this dangerous moment, it seemed the two lovers had achieved a profound connection. Callista's vitality visibly returned, at a rate noticeable to the naked eye. "She's coming back to life," the medical staff murmured to themselves, seemingly in disbelief. After all, just 5 minutes of oxygen deprivation could cause irreversible brain death, yet Callista had miraculously survived after an asphyxiation. It was nothing short of a miracle. Callum knew it was a miracle, a gift from her. She had successfully taken her revenge and achieved great success. In reality, she had no regrets left. The only thing that kept her from leaving was a lingering affection for him. As a gift, she hadn't left. After the doctor treated her wounds, Callum gently cradled her like a baby in his arms. In the light drizzle, amidst the numerous machines and mounds of earth, everyone watching the couple felt something stirring deep inside them, a feeling that lingered for a long time. In short, with Callista saved, all their efforts hadn't been in vain. Callista was safe, but many others were about to face consequences. Callum had completely dismantled the local human trafficking ring. In the past, others had tried to eradicate this ring but faced immense obstacles. As the saying goes, the poor, who have nothing to lose, do not fear those in power. Few were willing to take on such a thankless and challenging task. But this time, Callum was genuinely furious. If these people dared to sell even his wife, was there anything they wouldn't dare to do? Ignoring the resistance from corrupt officials and civilians, he arrested over 100 people, freeing more than 400 trafficked women. His actions caused a huge public uproar. While most people applauded, there were many discordant voices. Some women, before being rescued, already had children or were even in their 50s, having become grandmothers. Yet, they still left with the rescuers from the Fairchild family without hesitation. As a result, the Fairchild family was accused of breaking up families and faced widespread resistance. In reality, those rescued left voluntarily. Those resigned to their fate or unwilling to leave were not forced. Disrupting social harmony, sparking a massive online controversy. Of course, aside from some malicious individuals and so-called saints, most people expressed rational opinions. One comment read, "Children can't be without their mothers, but those mothers are also someone's children, who were kidnapped. Those using children to coerce those poor women back should consider the suffering their families endured. I support the Fairchild family. Those women should never go back." Another read, "I always thought capitalists were all bad, but Mr. Callum is amazing. His rage for his beloved is so heroic, and single-handedly taking down several criminal organizations is so cool. I can't help it. I want to have his babies." Someone replied to the comment above, "Too late, you have no chance. Our dear Mr. Callum is utterly devoted to his fiancée. To find her, he almost turned our entire county upside down. The night he found her, I did nothing but watch the planes fly back and forth at least 100 times. Finally, they lifted a massive machine 2,000 meters up the mountain and rescued his fiancée amidst a landslide disaster. The plot is more thrilling than a movie. It shows how much he cares about his fiancée, so you can forget about having his babies. However, there were discordant voices, too." One netizen named Wordly Views commented, "Saving his fiancée is enough. Why turn entire villages upside down? Breaking up hundreds of families. Some of those kids are so young and they're encouraging those women to abandon their husbands and children. What's the point?" One reply read, "Enough, you idiot. Are you out of your mind? If your daughter was kidnapped, would you say the same?" Wordly Views, "If it were my daughter, I'd tell her to stay with her husband and raise her children, not come back." This comment immediately drew a barrage of criticism. One comment read, "No wonder you say that, you're a beast. Even wild beasts look after their young." Another read, "Watch your words. What do you mean by married? They were sold. The buyers never saw them as human, and you expect them to stay with abusive men and raise kids. Anyone born into your family is truly unlucky." One netizen cursed, "I hope your child gets kidnapped." Chapter 517. She got off lightly. Under the prevailing circumstances, it was hardly surprising that public opinion overwhelmingly favored Callum. Within the Fairchild family itself, the dissent was palpable. The fundamental objective for any commercial enterprise is, without question, the pursuit of profit. However, The project in question was not only exceedingly demanding but also riddled with potential hazards. Should it be poorly executed, it might well culminate in a scandal, offering no clear advantages. Consequently, a majority of the shareholders initially expressed their opposition. Nevertheless, their objections were swiftly quelled by a decisive remark from Callum. His significant contributions to the welfare of the family, coupled with the prestige that Callista added to the Fairchild's reputation, were sufficient to temper their discontent, reducing them to subdued murmurs rather than outright confrontations. The matter of managing the individuals they had rescued presented a separate challenge altogether. When Quinta sought out Callum, he found him beside the sickbed, deeply absorbed in something on his computer. Yet, any small stir from the bedridden patient immediately diverted his attention, signaling that his primary concern was not his work. Approaching him, Quintus began, "Mr. Callum," as he extended the compiled documents toward him, "I've completed the count. 209 were reclaimed by their families. Before they departed, I made it clear to them, should they encounter any form of mistreatment, abandonment, or societal ostracism, the doors of the Fairchild Manor remain open as a sanctuary for their return." After a brief review, Callum set the documents aside, prompting Quintus to proceed with his report. "The others, numbering around 100, have been positioned in the pharmaceutical factory. They require no specific skills for this role, mere diligence and precision are enough. The compensation provided is ample for their sustenance, and they are quite content with the arrangement." He paused briefly before adding, "The 20 odd women who were severely traumatized have been entrusted to Mr. Sutton, who has expressed profound empathy and committed to providing them with counseling. As for what lies ahead for them, much will depend on their individual destinies." Callum nodded slightly, then, with a hint of frost in his voice, he inquired, "And Quincy?" Quintus responded, "The Hundeman brothers have been detained. They've admitted to the crimest Quincy has committed. The remains have been recovered. Now, we're merely awaiting the judiciary's decision. At the very least, she faces a life sentence." "She got off lightly," Callum remarked casually, then turned his attention to Callista, who remained unresponsive. Several days had passed, and she had yet to awaken. The doctor had warned that prolonged oxygen deprivation might have resulted in brain damage, potentially leading to memory loss. Only time would reveal the full extent of the impact this possibility tormented Callum. He had invested so much in their relationship. What would become of them if she couldn't remember him? Later that evening at he gently wined Callista's face, a tack he had recently assumed, visitors like Jared, Ambrose, and Wyatt had come, though Callista had been unconscious and unaware of their presence. Benedict, too, had stopped by on several occasions, noticing Callum's visibly deteriorating health. "Mr. Callum, why not take a short break? I'm here now. I can handle things," Benedict suggested. Callum looked at him, his brow furrowing, before replying. "You can address me as my mother does." Considering himself already a part of the family, he found it strange that Benedict still addressed him formally as Mr. Callum Feng. Benedict's expression wavered as he tentatively adopted a new form of address. "K. Callum, yeah?" Callum responded, a pleased smile crossing his face, revealing a side of him that Benedict found. surprisingly amiable. Benedict glanced at Callista again before urging. Don't you want to take a break? The doctor said Kalik should be waking up soon. I'll call you when she does, okay? Callum declined, his gaze settling back on Callista. I want to be the first one she sees when she wakes up. If you have nothing else, please proceed with your affairs. Benedict smiled wryly as he was swiftly dismissed, yet he felt a sense of reassurance. Surely Callum, so devoted to his daughter, meant her no harm. With this in mind, Benedict settled down, ready to engage in casual conversation. Callum, the news about the rescue operation of abducted women is spreading. Getting involved could potentially damage your reputation. How could you? If it were Callie, she would have supported this too, Callum interjected from beside the sickbed. Well, that's true, Benedict murmured, reflecting on his daughter's innate compassion. No matter what, she's actually a soft-hearted kid at heart. Upon seeing Benedict, a question suddenly resurfaced in Callum's mind. Was it her grandfather who, upon seeing Benedict, a question so taught Callie all her medical skills? I never knew old Mr. Stafford was capable of such feats. Callista's grandfather was indeed a formidable man, a fact that even Sean acknowledged. However, no matter how powerful he was, he couldn't perform miracles like Callista herself, who had the ability to extend a person's life. Benedict paused, his expression revealing his puzzlement. Yes, her grandfather taught her. I began learning from him when I was young too, but eventually, I couldn't keep up. When Kalik was born and her mother passed away, I was so distraught that I inadvertently fathered another child, which led to my second marriage orchestrated by the Langley family. My father then raised her, and she was identifying medicines practically before she could even talk.